Together. Ya enam deiti hantaram paschainam anyatehatam ubhautau na vijanito nayam hanti na hanyate. Translation. Neither he who thinks the living entity the slayer, nor he who thinks is slain, is in knowledge, for the self slays not, nor is slain. Text 20. Na jayate mriyate va kadachin nayam bhutva bhavitava nabhuyaha ajo nitya shashvato yam purano nahanyate hanyamane sharire. Translation. For the soul there is neither birth nor death at any time. He has not come into being, nor does not come into being, and will not come into being. He is unborn, eternal, ever-existing, and primeval. He is not slain when the body is slain. Text 21. Vedavinashinam nityam yaenam ajam avyayam katam sapurushak partha kam gatayati hantikam. Translation. O Partha, how can a person who knows that the soul is indestructible, eternal, unborn, and immutable, kill anyone or cause anyone to kill? Text 22. Vasaṃsi jinani yathā vihāya navāni grinati naro purāni tathā sharīrāni vihāya jinani anyāni samyāti navāni dehi. As a person puts new garments, giving up old ones, the soul similarly accepts new material bodies, giving up the old and useless ones. Text 23. Nainam chindanti shastrani, nainam dahati pavakaha, nachainam kledayantyapo, nashoshayati marutaha. Translation. The soul can never be cut to pieces by any weapon, nor burned by fire, nor moistened by water, nor withered by the wind. Text 24. Achedyo yam adahyo yam akledyo shosha evacha nitya saravagata stanur achalo yam sanatanaha. Translation. This individual soul is unbreakable and insoluble and can be neither burned nor dried. He is everlasting, present everywhere, unchangeable, immovable, and eternally the same. Text 25. Avyaktoyam achintyoyam avikaryoyam uchite tasmat evam vidit vainam nanushochitam arhasi. It is translation. It is said that the soul is invisible, inconceivable, and immutable. Knowing this, you should not grieve for the body. Text 26. Atachainam nityajatam nityam vamanyasemritam tatapitvam mahabaho nainam shochitum arhasi. Translation. If, however, you think that the soul, or the symptoms of life, is always born and dies forever, you still have no reason to lament, O mighty armed. 27. Jatasihi druvo mrityur druvam janma mrityasya tasmat aparihar yerte natvam shochitum arhasi. Translation. One who has taken his birth is sure to die, and after death one is sure to take birth again. Therefore, in the unavoidable discharge of your duty, you should not lament. Text 28. Avyaktadini bhutani vyakta madhyani bharata avyakta nidhanyanyeva tattaka paridevana. Translation. All created beings are manifest in their beginning, manifest in their interim state, and unmanifest. So what need is there for lamentation? All created beings are unmanifest in their beginning. Manifest in their interim. Text, finally, text 29. Ashcharyavat pasyati kaschidenam Ashcharyavat vadati tataiva chanya Ashcharyavat chainam anya shunoti Shrutvapyenam vedanachaiva kaschit. Translation. Some look on the soul as amazing. Some describe him as amazing. And some hear of him as amazing. While others, even after hearing about him, cannot understand him at all. Going back to 19. Neither he who thinks the living entity the slayer, nor he who thinks it slain is in knowledge, for the self slays not, nor is slain. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. When an embodied living entity is hurt by fatal weapons, it is to be known that the living entity within the body is not killed. The spirit soul is so small that it is impossible to kill him by any material weapon, as will be evident from subsequent verses. Nor is the living entity killable because of his spiritual constitution. What is killed, or is supposed to be killed, is the body only. This, however, does not at all encourage killing of the body. The Vedic injunction is Ma himsyat sarva bhutani. Never commit violence to anyone. Nor does understanding that the living entity is not killed encourage animal slaughter. Killing the body of anyone without authority is abominable and is punishable by the law of the state as well as by the law of the Lord. Arjuna, however, is being engaged in killing for the principle of religion and not whimsically. This is an accusation that some people make against Bhagavad Gita or Vedic knowledge, that the idea that the soul lives on will encourage people to kill others. Because they say, well, he's not dying, he's just changing body. Nothing wrong with changing body, let's kill him. This is their, they think logically that that's the progression. Although that doesn't seem to be very logical, because if that were the case, then why is it that we see that the people who accept this philosophy are generally more gentle and nonviolent than those who don't accept the philosophy? So it should be the other way around. The people who believe in reincarnation or that the soul doesn't die, they shouldn't mind causing harm to animals or other living entities. But we find just the opposite, that those who understand this philosophy, at the same time, they're also very kind and nonviolent, naturally. They don't like to harm even an ant, what to speak of a human or a cow. So that theory is not correct, that this will lead to unnecessary violence. Because if one accepts this teaching, for example, Lord Krishna is saying, at the same time, then he has to accept the other instructions of Krishna, and that is that one should not cause suffering to any living entity. You can't just take one part and leave the other part. Next text. For the soul there is neither birth nor death at any time. He has not come into being, does not come into being, and will not come into being. He is unborn, eternal, ever-existing, and primeval. He is not slain when the body is slain. Okay, so now we're talking about the soul. There's neither birth nor death. So what does that mean? That means he's always existed. There was never a time when he didn't exist, the soul. You and I, and all of us here in this material world, and all the souls in the spiritual, all souls are eternal. It's not that some are young souls, new souls. Sometimes people talk like that. He's an old soul. is a new soul. No, there's no old souls, there's no young souls, there's no new ones, they're all eternal. And there will not be any new souls. That's what this verse is saying. He will not come into being. There will not be any more souls generated, created. Because that would mean the scientists have a hope. Maybe we can, in the future, create a soul or some kind of a living person. But they cannot. Now, the question may come up, well, what happens when a worm gets cut in half? Because you have one living being, and then you cut the worm in half, and then you have two living beings. So what happened? What happened is that one of the souls stayed in one half, and that became his shorter body. He lost part of his body. But the other body was also quite suitable for residence, and another soul was put in there immediately to see how attentive the demigods are. Anywhere in the universe, if someone cuts a worm in half, immediately the demigods put another soul in. They're so expert. They're so attentive. The laws are so perfect. For example, the laws of nature, water freezes 32 degrees. Just imagine how, in order to enforce that law, they have to be very attentive to the details. That's a law. Water everywhere has to freeze at that temperature. Similarly, the demigods are making sure that all these souls are moving where they're supposed to go. But it's not that new souls are created. There's no question of creating a soul, and there's no question of destroying a soul. It's a different energy. It's an eternal energy that is impenetrable by anything material. That's why Krishna is saying here, Nachejoyam adahyoyam akledyoshosha evacha. You can't cut it. You can't burn it. You can't moisten it. It's completely indestructible. That's the nature of the soul. And, as we were mentioning today, it doesn't apply only to those who believe in it. And it doesn't apply only to those who accept the Savior or whatever. It's everyone is eternal. Now, formerly, this teaching was there, of course, from Lord Jesus Christ, because he knew this. But it got erased. It got removed because some of the church managers thought, if people find out that they're going to be living forever without joining the church, well, then, you know, we're going to be out of business. So better we tell them that you won't live forever unless you join the church. Then you can have eternal life. This was some theory they had. And they thought, along with the idea that if you don't join the church, you can live forever, but you have to burn in hell forever. Actually, when you think about it, the idea of reincarnation is completely supported in the Christian teachings. For example, it says that when you die, if you're a good soul, you go to heaven forever. Live with God. All right? You're going to get a body. You're not going to go there without a body. You're not going to be just some, you know, impersonal whiff of air or something. You're going to have a body to live with God. Okay. Then if you die, if you're sinful and you die, then you go to hell and burn forever. So at least you're living. You have some kind of... If you're burning forever, you must have some kind of body that's burning. So you have to... Otherwise, what does it mean to burn forever if you don't have a body that can burn? So that's also eternal life and reincarnation. And if you're in the middle, you go to purgatory. What is it? Limbo. And you also have a body. You're still existing as a person. In all three states, whether you're sinful, whether you're wonderful, or you're in between, you go on living. They believe in reincarnation, but they don't have the full understanding that those there's many gradations of those too in between. There's many gray areas. You may not, not everyone has to go and stay in hell for such a long time. You can go for a short time in hell and then go to some other bodies. Continuing in the next text. O Partha, how can a person who knows that the soul is indestructible, eternal, unborn and immutable kill anyone or cause anyone to kill? Because Arjuna was lamenting that he said, now I'm going to kill all these people. And Krishna is saying, no, you're not going to kill any people because you can't kill the soul. Because that was one of Arjuna's arguments. Sin will overcome us if we kill such aggressors. Our spoils will be tainted with blood and all these nice, you know, sentiments. And Krishna says, what? There's no soul. No one's killing. No one's dying. So what are you talking about? You're talking about killing people. You can't kill anyone. Nor can anyone be killed. You can't kill anyone, nor can you be killed. So there's nothing to worry about. Don't fear. And you're not going to be killing anyone. As a person puts on new garments, giving up old ones, the soul similarly accepts new material bodies, giving up the old and useless ones. Such a wonderful analogy. We all use this so many times. Taking off one set of clothes, putting on another, the body is just like that. When it gets worn out, you take it off. Isn't it the snake? They give up their skin. So he just moves out of one skin and he gets a new one. That's even in this life. And then after this life, the soul, because no one can see the soul moving from body to body, they can't imagine it. They don't believe it. But just because you can't see the soul doesn't mean it's not there. We don't see the soul, but we can tell there's something animating this body. The soul is very small. Keshagra shatabhagasya shatada kalpitasya. It's 1/10,000th the size of the tip of the hair. That's another reason why you can't cut it. Prabhupada gave two reasons. One, you can't cut it because it's too small. And the other is, it's constitutionally eternal. So you can't kill it that way either. Text 23. We already discussed that. Number 24. Discussed that. 25. It is said that the soul is invisible, inconceivable, and immutable. Knowing this, you should not grieve for the body. Don't grieve for the body if you say, oh, now they're going to be dead. Well, who's going to be dead? The soul's not going to be dead. Well, the body's going to be dead. Well, why are you grieving for the body? It was already dead. The whole idea of grieving for anyone or for anything is unintelligent. It means one is not learned. Therefore, the wise lament neither for the living nor the dead. Because everyone will live eternally. There's no question. When someone dies, part of the grief, at least amongst the ignorant people, part of the grief is, oh no, it's such a shame. Now they don't exist. They can't enjoy like us anymore. Isn't it? That's part of it. Oh, it's such a shame. Now, here we are watching this wonderful football game, and this poor man who died earlier today, he is not getting to enjoy it. What a shame. Little do they know that he's living somewhere else. He didn't die. He just moved out of their view. There are some philosophers who say, things that I don't perceive, they don't exist. You know, if I'm not perceiving it, it doesn't really exist. That's very self-centered. That only because you... Only if you perceive things do they exist. Well, that's not very logical. So many things are going on that you're not perceiving. If you were God, you could say that. Now, it's true that only if God sees is there anything to be seen. And only if God recognizes things do they actually exist. That's a fact. But we're not God, so we can't say that. There's no need to grieve for the body. It's like if someone takes off their sweatshirt and, you know, then it gets burned. There's no, why grieve for the sweatshirt? Sweatshirt isn't a sentient being. The sweatshirt is not suffering. Or if you put the sweatshirt on a nice couch and say, here, sit here. The sweatshirt is not enjoying sitting on the nice couch either. There's no enjoyment or suffering for something that's inanimate. Only for the animate, for the soul. But the soul doesn't die. So what's the use in lamenting for the soul? He doesn't get hurt. He can't get harmed. There's no disease for the soul. Do you think a soul can be diseased? Well, which disease? Tuberculosis or smallpox? No, they don't affect the soul. The soul's, if it's unaffected by fire and weapons, then why would it be affected by germs? No, it's not affected. The soul's completely unassailable by anything material. Nothing to lament. He remains the same. He's eternal. Why are you lamenting? He's going to live forever. 26. If, however, you think that the soul, or the symptoms of life, is always born and forever dies, you still have no reason to lament, O mighty armed. Well, this is, again, reverse psychology. If you don't actually understand, if you misunderstand and you think that the soul keeps dying at the death of the body, well, let's read the purport. There's always a class of philosophers almost akin to Buddhists who do not believe in the separate existence of the soul beyond the body. When Lord Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita, it appears that such philosophers existed, and they were known as Lokayatikas, Lokayatikas, and Vaibhavishikas. Such philosophers maintain that life symptoms take place at a certain mature condition of material combination. The modern material scientists and materialist philosophers also think similarly. According to them, the body is a combination of physical elements, and at a certain stage, the life symptoms develop by interaction of the physical and chemical elements. The science of anthropology is based on this philosophy. Currently, many pseudo-religions, now becoming fashionable in America, are also adhering to this philosophy as well as to the nihilistic, non-devotional Buddhist sects. You think that the soul is a combination of chemicals coming together. Well, then, what are you lamenting about if the chemicals change form? No one laments if someone pours some chemicals down the drain. There's no, you don't cry, oh, some chemicals. Or when you make a chemical experiment and you change the, you mix something and it makes a different combination. That's the point here. There's no need to lament if you say everything is just chemicals or just molecules. 27, one who has taken his birth is sure to die, and after death, one is sure to take birth again. Therefore, in the unavoidable discharge of your duty, you should not lament. Everyone who is born is sure to die, and everyone who dies is sure to take birth again. Therefore, there's nothing to lament about. You don't die. And after death, you'll get another body. You'll live again, according to your work and your consciousness. The soul gets his next body. Another way we can think of it, when, for example, let's say one, you have some car and it wears out. Well, you get another car according to your buying power. If you have enough money, you can buy a better car. If you don't, then you buy a worse one. But somehow or other, everyone, we get another body according to our piety or impiety. 28. All created beings are unmanifest in their beginning, manifest in their interim state, and unmanifest again when annihilated. So what need is there for lamentation? Purport. Accepting, there are two classes of philosophers, one believing in the existence of the soul and the other not believing in the existence of the soul. There is no cause for lamentation in either case. Non-believers in the existence of the soul are called atheists by followers of Vedic wisdom. Yet even if, for argument's sake, we accept this atheistic theory, there is still no cause for lamentation. Apart from the separate existence of the soul, the material elements remain unmanifested before creation. From this subtle state of non-manifestation comes manifestation, just as from ether, air is generated, from air, fire is generated, from fire, water is generated, and from water, earth becomes manifested. From the earth, many varieties of manifestations take place. Take, for example, a big skyscraper manifested from the earth. When it is dismantled, the manifestation becomes again unmanifested and remains as atoms in the ultimate stage. The law of conservation of energy remains, but in course of time, things are manifested and unmanifested. That is the difference. Then what causes, therefore, lamentation, either in the stage of manifestation or in unmanifestation? Somehow or other, even in the unmanifested stage, things are not lost. Another way of looking at this is the soul, after the annihilation of the universe, they all go back into the unmanifest stage called Pradhan, which is within the Mahavishnu. And then when he exhales, and they come out again and they take their manifest stage. So you could, in speaking of this, the manifestation of the universe, before the universe, the souls were in unmanifest within the Mahavishnu. And during, they're manifest, they get their bodies. And then afterwards, they go back into Mahavishnu again. Continuing, text 29. Some look on the soul as amazing, some describe him as amazing, and some hear of him as amazing, while others, even after hearing about him, cannot understand him at all. Ascharyavat. Well, the soul is amazing. It's how is this, how can there be a particle of energy that exists forever? And it's conscious. And it never dies. That's amazing. How can this little particle so small give consciousness to a huge body? It is amazing. Any questions? Well, if you know all that, if you know that you're going to hell and you know that you're going to have to go through all these species, then why would you act in such a way that you have to go to hell and go through all the different species? The lamentable thing would be that you have all this knowledge, but you're not acting on it. The question is, why do some souls appear to be more frustrated with material existence than other souls? Different souls are on different levels according to their past activities. Some of them may have already practiced yoga and may have gotten some knowledge in their previous life. So they continue where they're left off. Therefore, you may find some souls that are already very elevated. They already know a lot from their previous life. And they continue searching for the absolute truth. And other souls, they may not have ever performed yoga, or at least not for a long time. And they're not interested in transcendental knowledge, and they weren't in the past either. So there's different levels. Whatever we learn in this life also we'll carry to our next life. So if we don't complete it, if you don't reach 100% perfection in this life in bhakti yoga, let's say you're only at 50%, then next life you start at 51%. It's like a bank account. If you put in $1,000 and then you leave for a while and you come, when you start putting money in again, you begin from $1,001. It's kind of like a suspended animation. Sleep. You have a question? God has the ability to terminate soul, but He doesn't. He can do that. He can do anything, but He doesn't wish to do that. That's not His plan is to let the souls live eternally. Just like a parent, a good parent wouldn't terminate his child. He could do it, little baby, father or mother. So should we terminate this child? They can terminate, but they don't terminate. They want the child to live. So it would be abnormal for God to want to terminate His beloved children, parts and parcels. Does that answer your question? This form? The worm. I don't know. Next question. It's much easier to think you're the body because you can't see the soul. And because most people are just dealing with animal propensities, like why dogs don't, you know, when a dog sees another dog, he doesn't say, you know, where's the soul? Or, in other words, most people are on the level of lower consciousness, so they don't, as Krishna says here, the soul is invisible. So you can't see it. So if you can't see it, and the soul is amazing, ascharya. Some can't understand it, even after hearing about it. It's not easy. This is not for foolish people. It's for intelligent people. People who are intelligent can understand the soul, and people who are not intelligent, they can't perceive the soul at all, even after they hear about it. Have you ever had that experience? You explain to someone, okay, there's a soul in the body, the soul's the driver, and we're not this body. And they say, yes, yes. And then afterwards they just go on and say, I'm the body. So they don't really understand, even after hearing it. It's too subtle for them to understand. People who are sinful, for example, they're not allowed to understand this philosophy. They don't have the brain substance. See, this is not the highest spiritual understanding. This is just the basic, the beginning. But someone who's very much addicted to sinful activities, he won't even be able to understand this, the beginning. Any other? Srimad Bhagavad Gita as it is, ki jai.